You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Strong. Empowered. Fearless. Here at ESPN, we celebrate Women's History Month by highlighting women breaking barriers every single day. We admire them.
Hey, can't help but watch when she plays.
We celebrate them.
Back to back champion.
Your national champion.
The all-time leading scorer in women's college basketball.
We uplift them.
The impossible is possible.
Women's sports is a real thing.
She got the moves.
Who's ready to hit?
Me!
We honor the women who came before us.
It's bigger than basketball.
Tara stands on top.
No one has won more games in college basketball.
This is for all of the women that played at Stanford.
Brittany Griner is a generational talent.
So we can continue to push the limits of what's possible for the women after us.
The youngest head coach to win a national championship.
Jen Powell, umpiring a major league spring training game.
It doesn't matter if you're a girl or boy. If you can shoot, you can shoot.
I want my legacy to be the impact that I can have on young kids.
Women change the conversation. Women change the game. Women change the world.
Thanks to Molly for that special open on International Women's Day. I'm hosting today. Yes, I am. I'm back in the house, but crewed up with Shanae Ogumakeye, the one and only Brian Windhorst. Hello, everybody. How y'all doing? Now, Shanae, I want you to know you and Kimberly Martin and Asia Wilson and everybody else. I mean, it's a little bit different for y'all. It's International Women's Day, so you got it going on, and it's your day. To the fellas. That would be Wendy and everybody else included. You know my rules. I'm hosting. You will speak when spoken to. You will cut it short when it's topic. That does not apply to the ladies. The ladies, it's y'all day. But the fellas, you know what time it is. You know what time it is. Let's get right into it, y'all. Marquee game last night with a potential finals preview between the Celtics and the Denver Nuggets. Nikola Jokic with another stellar performance in a close game. But the highlight of the night came on a monstrous follow slam by the one and only Aaron Gordon. Late in the fourth, Jason Tatum with a potential wide open go-ahead three-point attempt. That misses as Denver takes this one 115 to 109. After the game, Big Perk himself posted on X, quote, "It comes down to MVP plays in games like this. That's the difference between the MVP and a guy just getting votes." Ouch. Here's Kristaps Porzingis on a tough loss to the Nuggets.
It could have went our way and we're having a completely different, and you're saying, oh, you guys look like they have Denver's number, you know, so it could go both ways. And I like that we have this loss in a regular season. It stings. It has to sting. And we have to learn and we have to improve.
Oh, yeah. No, it was another playoff atmosphere for sure. As we talked pregame, you know, you got to give the Celtic fans credit. You know, they always come out strong. You know, but you know what we say, right? They can take that L on the way out, baby.
You heard him right there. Listen, let's get right to it. Shanae, I'll bring the first question on you, especially considering Tatum finished with 15 points of 5 of 13 shooting. Was last night a blow to Tatum's MVP case?
You know, Stephen A., I first want to address Kendrick Perkins. That's my big bro. I'm sending him a lot of love, okay?
Okay.
But he has said over the entire course of the NBA season, well, my MVP vote is going to go to the best player on the best team. And so that would technically, by the numbers, be Jason Tatum. So for him to tweet that, I'm like, okay, Perk, you got to tell us who your new MVP is.
There's some inconsistency
and what you're doing. Thank you.
Yes.
Absolutely. So I had to call that out. Now, okay, this is an example. When you go buy a lottery ticket, do you feel bad when you don't win? Not really, because you know the odds of that are not necessarily in your favor. I don't think that people have truly bought in on this being Jason Tatum's MVP year, just because he is surrounded by a strong supporting cast. This is a team that has taken steps forward, as we've seen consistently over the course of 60-plus games this NBA season. But what we wanted from Jason Tatum to have was that moment versus the defending champs, because everyone knows that Boston is building towards an NBA championship. They want banner number 18, and they want Jason Tatum to lead the way. Instead, you see a guy who struggled in the fourth quarter. I think it was 1-for-5, I think, in the fourth. You see a guy that only shot the ball 13 times in the game. I mean, Jaylen Brown, I believe, shot 29 times. You want Jason Tatum to be that guy because he has been that guy for this team. When we started talking about this dynamic duo between Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, we're like, okay, who's going to edge each other out? And Tatum has done that the last 2 or 3 years. He is number one on the food chain for Boston. So when you go to this matchup versus the Denver Nuggets and have an opportunity to make a statement and you fall short, yes, it hurts his MVP case, but I do think that this is a case that not many people had shined a light on. People see Jokic as an MVP candidate. People see SGA, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, as a candidate. People even said Luka. People say Ant before they say Jason Tatum. So I think the odds of him winning were never necessarily in his favor, but we wanted those moments to prove that they're going to be a championship team come June, and we just got denied one of those great opportunities.
Well, Janae Ogunwoke, on International Women's Day, I don't want to take this position because, I mean, the ladies are, this is what it's all about, especially today. But I have to confess to you that I'm very disappointed because you're diluting the impact of First Take, because the one person that has been shining light on Jason Tatum being the league MVP is me, okay? And in light of his performance last night, I have to say I'm a bit heartbroken because I think that he's put it in grave jeopardy. It's not a finished deal. There's still enough games to go for him to make amends. But you're talking about a guy averaging 27, 28 points per game in 2 losses to Denver this year against a reigning defending NBA champion, a league MVP, and a Nikola Jokic, even though he's not the present MVP, that would be Joel Embiid. You're talking about a Jason Tatum that's averaged 18.5 points on 38% shooting and 23% from three-point range in the 2 losses. They were 0-2 to the Denver Nuggets this year. That is not a good thing. Jaylen Brown shows up and drops 41 last night on 16-29 shooting. Very reminiscent of the NBA Finals when Jaylen Brown showed up, but Jason Tatum was struggling. Okay, so we have to take that into consideration. His 29 shots, Jason Tatum, why did you only get 13 shots last night? I'm wondering about that. Then we've got to take into account the fact that, again, it reminds folks of the kind of performance we saw in the NBA Finals, and you're wondering what you're going to do when you go up against the big teams in the West. You're 0-2 against Denver this year. You're 0-1 against OKC. You're 1-1 against the Minnesota Timberwolves. I'm looking at it from that perspective, and I'm saying that is not a good situation for a guy vying for his first league MVP candidate. I've been big on Jason Tatum needing to be considered the leader for the MVP vote. Best player on the best team in the NBA. But the best team in the NBA is 0-2 against the reigning defending NBA champions, who, by the way, are a top 3 seed in the Western Conference, okay? They're vying for the number 1 spot in the Western Conference, and against the Boston Celtics, who are supposedly the best team, the NBA champions are undefeated against them. To me, that is a blemish if you are Jason Tatum and looking for the MVP award, Wendy, and that's where I'm coming from with it. What about you?
Oh, it's a blemish. Stephen A., I appreciate the position, the eloquence at which you've talked about Jason Tatum as MVP candidate. And I'm telling you, your voice does matter a lot, because I have seen the MVP odds change in his direction after you sort of started to make your case. But you're going to have to take the Michael Malone advice here and take the L, because yep, Jason Tatum's MVP case is over. It is not happening. And I mean, this has been a brutal, brutal 3 days for an MVP case for Jason Tatum. And 3 days in March doesn't make the season. The finish to that game in Cleveland the other night, really that whole fourth quarter, and that finish to that game, very hard. He comes into this game, which was as high of a level of a regular season game as you're going to find. Both teams fully healthy, both teams rested. Jokic has got the gas pedal all the way down. Everybody is into this game. Jaylen Brown came out with fire in his eyes from the opening tip. You've got Michael Malone stomping up and down the sideline like it's a game 7. And you got Jason Tatum having as many turnovers as baskets. No, you can't be the MVP and perform that way in these games. And he's had a number of disappointments in the clutch. Now, they just had an 11-game win streak where he was great. The game that he played on Sunday against the Warriors, where he was playing just killer interior basketball, going in and out, was as impressive a performance as I've seen as a team this year. But this is where, especially because he's behind, he was not in the top four of the last straw poll that Tim Bontemps did from the actual voters. He needed an absolute dominant stretch run to pull off this move, because fair or not, people have held his playoff failures against him in this framing, and this has not helped. I will say this. I have said before, Jason Tatum is in position to have one of the greatest summers in the history of the NBA. He has got a great chance to win the championship. He has got a great chance in the finals to be the leader on the team and maybe win a finals MVP. He will sign, I can promise you, he's already qualified for the Supermax. In July, he will be offered a $300 million contract that will become the highest contract in the history of the NBA, and I'm almost positive he will sign it. And then he will go play for Team USA if he's healthy and have a great chance to win the gold medal in what will be the highest competitive level tournament in the history of basketball at the international level. Everything is there on the table for him, but the MVP trophy isn't going to be one of them. He was already a long shot, and this week have cemented it. I'm sorry.
Well, but that's the whole point. I don't think he should have been a long shot, and that really, really bothers me, because I think that he and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander should have been one and two in the mix. Now, I'm looking at Jokic in the two games against Boston this year. 41 points, 13 assists. In the two games against Boston, with Porzingis and Horford as primary defenders. I got to pay attention to that, and that just reminds us of the greatness of Jokic, which Mark Schlereth, a.k.a. Stink, that used to work here, that does radio in Denver, texted me at 6 o'clock this morning to remind me about, okay? Thank you, Mark. But the point is that you've got people in Denver, they've got a chip on their shoulders because they don't think they've been mentioned enough, they don't think they've been respected enough, they don't think they've been appreciated enough. And I think the thing that also hurts Tatum is that coming into this game, it was treated like a championship game. Denver was saying to themselves, Shanae, look, we're the reigning defending champions. We've been down this road. We know what it takes. We're relevant. We're not prioritized to being a number one or a number two seed from October through February. But now that March has arrived and April's on the way, here we come. And they've elevated their level of play, their level of focus. And we see that and we get that. I'm just looking at Jokic and I'm saying, this brother is putting the world on notice. Here I come again. And if you're Tatum, you had to answer that call last night, and you didn't, and that's what bothers me, Shanae.
Yeah, and I think that you said the word. It's always been, and that's what I was alluding to with, like, the lottery, winning the lottery. It's always been a long shot for Jason Tatum. I mean, prior to Embiid going down, we had Embiid as a favorite. Then, afterward, now it goes to Jokic. And then we're talking about the West and SGA. And then you have to put, you know, other people into those categories before we mention Jason Tatum. I was right there with you. I've been following. I love Stephen A. I love First Take. I love all the energy in the mornings. And I've been right there with you saying, why aren't we talking about the team that is rolling? Right? Why aren't we talking about Jason Tatum leading this team, taking less shots, but it seems like it's working better. It's doing more for the Celtics. But Brian is actually, you know, absolutely correct. This was a rough swing for the Celtics in the way that if he was going to make up some ground, this was a ripe opportunity. But it's always felt, unfortunately, like a long shot for the MVP. But I do think the intention over the entire course of the season has not necessarily been Jason Tatum MVP. It's like, we have to get to the NBA Finals. We have to win a championship. That's where Boston's energy has been constructed more so than the individual success of Jason Tatum.
On today, International Women's Day, you know, I think it's apropos in a very fun and affectionate way to take, to take a shot at my girl Malika Andrews by saying this: as great as you two are on NBA Today each afternoon, y'all are even better in the mornings. Maybe you should, like, come on in the mornings a little bit
more. But we need our beauty sleep. I'll be honest, I can wake up once a week. I need to be load management in the morning. So, like, once or twice a week.
First Take fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite First Take episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and PTI ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/First Take. That's Amazon.com/First Take to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
We're working it. We got to move on to something else because something spectacular happened last night. The Timberwolves announced, before I do all of that, the Timberwolves sadly announced Karl-Anthony Towns will have surgery on a torn meniscus early next week. Sources told Woj that Cat is expected back early in the Western Conference playoffs. That's what we're talking about right now. Meanwhile, last night, Anthony Edwards put on a show in the Timberwolves' close 113-111 win over the Indiana Pacers, matching a season high 44 points. Ant-Man made a clutch late game three-pointer for the lead and later delivered a spectacular game-saving block at the rim to secure the victory for Minnesota. He talked about that amazing block after the game. Listen up.
I hit my head, I think, on the rim. It's hurting real bad. And I landed on my wrist, but I mean, you know, I saw him with the lane. I knew he was going for the layup, and I was just like, man, I'm finna go get this. I ain't never jumped that high in my life.
Well, we saw him jump that high last night. The brother special, I've been telling y'all. See, this is the thing about an Ant-Man's box office, okay? And even though I don't like the fact that Karl-Anthony Towns is out, I'm loving the fact that Ant-Man is going to have to step it up even more and show the world what he's made of, because I think he's got it in him. What did y'all think about that block? What do y'all think about him? Let's start with you, Shanae.
So I don't know if, you know, we went to school at different times. If you guys ever read the book Call of the Wild, it's about those wolves, right, that are dogs, right? I feel like this has been a calling of the wild version of Ant-Man in the best ways. I mean, without Karl-Anthony Towns yesterday all over NBA Today, we were talking about the impact on the Western Conference standings based off of Cat being that X factor. I mean, he is averaging 22 points per game. He's shooting 42% from three. They're one of the few NBA teams that are allowed to play two big men, including Rudy Gobert, on the floor. That's based off of the talents of Karl-Anthony Towns, and missing him was going to be a tremendous blow to the T-Wolves and being able to hold the top spot. Then the Wild came out, and I think this is something people should keep note on. Ant Edwards, in games without Karl-Anthony Towns, he's averaging 37 points, and the Timberwolves are 3-0 in that time. And one thing that I love is, we've said this the whole season, it's not his points, it's not that really, like, makes us excited about the future, him being a future face of the league, or if not, taking one of those mantles of it. It's just how committed he is to this process, to being that guy, that leader, that dog at all moments. If you watch this game, this man was doing everything. He was knocking down threes. He was attacking the paint. He was finishing. He started off the game, I think, with a rolled ankle. Don't matter. Finished with 44. And then it was that block, which was, I mean, look, 2016, it was, what was it? The shot and the block, NBA Finals, LeBron James.
Yep.
Since then, I have not felt a way about a block until yesterday. 2016 now to 2024. This block where there are literal pogo sticks in his legs, he said, I jumped the highest in my life. And then it was him walking after, just showing his competitive fire. We are witnessing the birth of an NBA superstar. He has made steps each year as he's developed in the NBA. Now he's taking a team that was dealt a blow to a significant win. I'm a believer in Ant-Man.
Go ahead, Wendy.
Stephen A., I don't know about you, but I don't know if I've seen a more amazing highlight in the last decade than this play. Because, first off, if you watch it in slow motion, it almost looks like it's not real, like it's manipulated because of how fast he goes straight up. And you're almost looking like, wait a minute, there's a trampoline in there or something. Also, he hits his head on the rim. I'm going to say that again. He hits his head on the rim, and then he has a hellacious fall. He falls flat on his face, almost breaks his wrist, and then pops back up like he's made out of rubber because he's going to celebrate. I mean, also, 44 points. So, with Karl Towns going out, they are facing an uphill battle to keep this number one seed. They are starting a 6-game road trip. They got a real tough back-to-back tonight in Cleveland. Then they come out to LA for 2 games. They've got 3 games left with the Nuggets. Their opportunity to get the number one seed is to take care of those 3 games, and now they're not going to have Karl Towns for any of them. And offensively, they've got some weaknesses. And Towns was, the guy who held them up, in addition to Edwards. Now he is not going to be there. And even though they have good depth at the big man spot with Naz Reid, they're losing a huge offensive firepower. And so what we're going to see in this next 3-4 weeks, guys, is a light shined on Ant Edwards like we've never seen before. He took 35 shots last night. 35. And they needed every single one of them. And that was the Pacers. That was not the Cavs or the Lakers or the Clippers or the Warriors and other stuff they've got coming up. He is going to go through a period here where he is going to be asked to carry that team. And I don't know if he's going to be able to do it. I would not expect them to hold on to that number one seed, but I do expect to have more moments from this from Ant Edwards that we're going to celebrate.
Here's the part that I think you're missing. First of all, I don't expect much of them with Karl Anthony Towns out. 4-time All-Star, played in 60 of Minnesota's 63 games, first 63 games this season. After playing in only 29 in injury plague last season, okay, we get all of that. Still averaging 22 points a game, 50% shooting, career high 42.3% from three-point range. He's going to be missed, okay? That's going to put more of an onus on Anthony Edwards because when you look at their roster, they don't have a lot of offensive firepower. They're elite defensively, number one, actually. But offensively is where their problem lies. But here's what I think you're missing, Wendy. The beauty in all of this is what we're going to find out about Anthony Edwards. We thought we knew already, Shanae, Wendy. But now what you're going to see from him, with Karl Anthony Towns expected out until the playoffs, with y'all trying to hold on to a top seed, trying to make a run, trying to legitimize yourself as a title contender, making sure you don't get bounced out in the first round. All of this noise surrounding the Western Conference and the level of parity that exists, who can knock off who, et cetera, et cetera. We're talking about a guy that has superstar written all over him because of his athleticism, his potential. One of only 6 players in the NBA shooting 20%, but 50% from the field, 40 better than the 40% from three-point range. But I'm looking at it from this standpoint. It's about moments. And this is Anthony Edwards' moment. If you elevate your level of play and elevate Minnesota in the process without Karl Anthony Towns, that would be the solidification that we were looking for to sit up there and cement Anthony Davis as a big-time bona fide superstar who has arrived in the National Basketball Association. With Shai Gilgeous-Alexander dropping over 30 in 44-45 games, we see what we see from him. And there are still people who are underselling him. Nobody's going to undersell Anthony Edwards if Anthony Edwards takes this by storm. That's where I'm coming from with this, Janae. What about you?
Yeah, Wendy, I actually want to go to you because this is going to be a very difficult stretch for the Timberwolves, but it is important to note that the Timberwolves were built by the same man that built the Denver Nuggets, Tim Connelly. And I think he built them to rival the Nuggets with their defense, and they still have Rudy Gobert out there, and their defense can still carry them through as they try to find, like, Ant Edwards is not going to go for 44 every night, right? Like, he's been averaging 24, 25 a game. So, Wendy, I ask you, when do the Timberwolves, when are they hopeful to get, you know, Carl Anthony Towns back? Because if they can sort of manage this storm and, you know, stay within a short shot of that number one overall seed, will they still have enough firepower when they get him back to really carry through the playoffs?
So the good news is that this is not an injury that would be a six-month recovery timetable, as you typically see, or you sometimes see with meniscus injuries. It's an injury that can be a partial removal of the meniscus, and so that's usually around a six-week recovery time. And there's no such thing as minor knee surgery. You don't want to pin it down. They're saying they're going to reevaluate him in a month. It doesn't mean he'll be back in a month. The one thing that the Wolves have going for them is that the schedule this year, because of the play-in tournament, the playoffs don't even start till April 20th. That's 6-7 weeks from now. So there is a window there, if there's no setbacks and he's able to have a good rehab, that he could be there for the first round, that if not the first round, maybe soon after. And I do think they're going to stay near the top of the standings. I just think it's very bunched up. And they are a great matchup for Denver, because as we watched that game last night, one of the things that they can do, they don't have to put Gobert on to Jokic. Because they've got Naz Reid and Karl Towns, they can put another 7-footer on Jokic to be in his airspace, and then they can have Gobert defend the rim. Like, we saw Aaron Gordon victimize the Celtics over and over last night with those lobs
points
and those helps. You got the defensive player of the year back there, and that's one of the things. In addition to their length on the wing, Ant Edwards is 6'4", but he's got like almost a 7-foot wingspan, and he wants to defend. That's one of the great things about him. He's not one of these guys that's all offense. He wants to defend. He's still very much learning the game and learning some of the nuances, but you will never see him dog it on the defensive end. I spent a month with him last summer with Team USA, and I watched how hard he defended in the World Cup. He really cares about that end of the floor. But without Towns, their offense, already this year, even if they're fully healthy, I'm concerned they don't have the offense to win three rounds. They also haven't won a playoff series in 20 years, guys. 20 years. Ant was 2 years old the last time they won a playoff series. So to win three rounds is hard, and their offense holds them back. Without Towns, they're going to suffer on that end. But they do have options, and this is not a season-ending injury. This is not the end of the world for the Timberwolves, and getting that win last night in a game that they easily could have lost was a really good positive step after getting such bad news.
Well, like I said, they don't have to win every day, and they don't have to get to the NBA Finals or whatever, but you can make a run. And if you make a run, and you do so with the vast majority of that being without Karl Anthony Towns, that says everything we need to know about Anthony Edwards. No doubt about it. All right, thank you, guys, and we'll be back with y'all a little bit later. We've been celebrating Women's History Month each show, and in celebration of International Women's History Day, here's today's trivia question. How many consecutive Olympic matches did Misty May Traynor and Kerry Walsh Jennings win during their gold medal three-peat in beach volleyball? Find out after the break.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Today's trivia question is, how many consecutive Olympic matches did Misty Maytrena and Kerry Walsh Jennings win during their gold medal three-peat in beach volleyball? And the answer to the question is 21 straight matches. Only lost one set. Let's move on. Russell Wilson is visiting the Pittsburgh Steelers today. Source told our Adam Schefter, the Broncos have given Russ permission to speak with other teams ahead of his expected release at the start of the new league year on Wednesday. Comparing Wilson to the Steelers quarterbacks last year, Wilson went 7-8 as a starter before the Broncos benched him. He had 26 passing touchdowns, but also threw 8 interceptions, which was just one less than Kenny Pickett, Mason Rudolph, and Mitchell Trubisky combined. Shefty also is reporting that Wilson stopped in New Jersey for an exploratory meeting with the New York Giants. Kmart and Sam Acho joining us. Before I stay, first of all, happy International Women's Day. Hello, Kimberly. How are you?
Hello.
All right, we have to make sure we greet her right, Sam Acho.
Yes.
Now, it does not apply to her, Sam Acho, but you and me, we the fellas, you will speak when spoken to. I'm in this host year. You will speak when you spoken to.
Okay? Oh, we got the rules back.
No cussing.
Okay, we got the rules.
All right. Address me as Stephen A. or Mr. Stephen A. Don't badmouth my producers. And absolutely, positively, no rude reactions whatsoever. Those are the rules for you, Sam Acho.
Yes.
And for all the fellas, those rules do not apply to females. Before, all right, you wanted to say something? Make it quick. Make it quick.
One question. Where's Molly at, man? That's what I want to know, man. I got to call her no names. I could call her by her first name. No rules. Where's Molly?
She's at a undisclosed tropical vacation. That's what she doing her thing. She doing her thing. But we here,
respect.
And that's all that matters. We here, okay? So, Kimberly, let's get right to it. Will Russell Wilson make the Steelers legit threats in the AFC?
No. And you know why I could say that? I say that as somebody who covers the AFC North extensively. What is the most attractive thing about Russell Wilson right now, Stephen A. and Acho? Is it the play or is the price tag? And if the answer is the price tag, that in itself answers the question. In that, first of all, the Steelers aren't even a legit threat in their own division. Hear me again. In the AFC North, where you have Lamar Jackson and the Ravens, you have the Cleveland Browns with Deshaun Watson and Joe Flacco, we'll figure out where he is. And then you've got the Bengals with a healthy Joe Burrow coming back. And Acho, fix your face. Because right now, Russell, so here's the thing, and this is not disparaging Russell. I'm not disparaging Russell, but I talked to an offensive coach the other day, and I said, what is the ideal situation? He told me, a football guy, so don't come for me, he said, honestly, the ideal place for him would be as a backup to a high-end young quarterback. That's not me. That's a football guy. So when I look at Russell and I think about where he could fit, does he make the Steelers better? Yes. A legit threat in the AFC? No.
Go ahead, Acho.
Kmart, well, first of all, it's good to see you as always. But I couldn't disagree more, and a couple reasons why are this. You talk to a football guy. So I am a football guy. I played 9 years in the NFL. My first 4 years, I actually played in Arizona. I played against Russell Wilson. Remember that Super Bowl run, 2013 and 14? Like, I was going against him week after week, right? Twice a year, every year, et cetera. And so I've seen that version of Russell Wilson. And so that's kind of part A, is this idea that maybe he's washed up, and the thing you want is the price tag, not the player. No, I actually will take, to your point, I'll take the player, Russell Wilson, even in his down year, right? Last year, 26 touchdowns, 8 interceptions. That was a down year, quote unquote. Well, Kenny Pickett had 6 touchdowns. 4 interceptions. Even the year before, where Russell Wilson did it with a torn pec, another down year, he had 16 touchdowns with it. And it's like his worst year ever in his career, 16 touchdowns, right? And so for me, I'm not taking the price tag. Price tag is an added benefit. I want the player Russell Wilson, number two. And number three, just to counter your third point, to say that the Steelers aren't a legitimate threat last year, okay, you could maybe argue that, quote unquote, but mind you, they had 10 wins and 7 losses with what we just talked about at quarterback, 6 touchdowns from your starting quarterback and 4 interceptions. They did that with their defense. They are a top 10 defense last year, a perennial dominant defense. What they're missing is better quarterback play. And so if I'm Pittsburgh, if I'm saying, okay, can Russell Wilson make me a contender? Number one, absolutely. I've had 10 wins last year without a great quarterback play. Now give me even an average version of Russell, right? Even a healthy version of Russell. Maybe you don't go all the way back to 2013 or 2014, but give me that Russell with that defense, and you're absolutely talking about a contender in the AFC, period.
You know, I know this is your day. It's a day for all the ladies. But, you know, you don't have to just roll up on the set and just try to ruin everybody's day. Let me say this to you, Kimberly Martin. Let me speak. I want to throw these numbers by you, okay?
Okay,
I want to compare Russell Wilson to the Steelers quarterback play, period. Okay? Look, y'all, put me on the shot here. Don't go to the gym when I'm right here. Thank you very much. Don't go to the gym. I don't want a wide shot. Okay? Here's the deal, all right? Russell Wilson, yards per game, 219. Mm-hmm. All of the Steelers quarterback, mm-hmm. 193. Yards per passing attempt, mm-hmm. 7.1. Other Steelers quarterbacks, 6.1. Total rush yards, 618. Mm-hmm. Steelers, 391. TD passes over the last 2 years. Russell Wilson, 42. The Steelers, 25 combined. The fewest in the National Football League in a passer rating of 90.9, whereas the Steelers quarterbacks had 81.5. The Steelers, despite Mitchell Trubisky, despite Mason Rudolph, who was undefeated in 3 starts this year, despite Kenny Pickett, okay, the Steelers won 10 games, went to the playoffs, and you're telling me that if they get a quarterback who doesn't turn the ball over, has never thrown over more than 13 interceptions in a season, and oh, by the way, he only did that once. He's thrown 11 interceptions a couple of other seasons. That's about it. Doesn't turn the ball over, throws the deep ball with accuracy, doesn't beat himself, can still extend plays, has Pickens, has Johnson, has Harris, has Warren, has Friermuth on the offensive end, and a defense, and a defense that they have. You're trying to tell me that they can't compete? That is not the Kimberly Martin I know. And I have to say that I am very disappointed with the negativity emanating out of your mouth.
Oh, because I'm talking about your team, your little Steelers? Okay.
Go ahead.
It's not about negativity. Sam Acho, the first point that he made was, I remember playing against Russ back in 2014 and 20. Bro, how long ago was that, number one? Number two.
That is true. I had Acho back then.
The question is not, will Russell be a threat to Kenny Pickett? The question is, will the Steelers with Russell be a threat in the AFC? And I'm telling you, they made the playoffs last year. I know because I was there. I got it. But when you talk about the other teams in the conference, like, Russ will improve this offense, I have no doubt. But that's a different question. You're talking about, you're throwing numbers with Russell versus Mitchell Trubisky, Mason Rudolph.
Quick question. If you're willing to concede that
the
he's going to let me finish my question, please. If you're willing to concede that he's going to improve their offense and their offense is going to be better, well, what does that mean for the Steelers collectively if the offense is going to be better?
First of all, what happened last year?
What happened last year?
The reason I say that, because, yes, they made the playoffs last year.
They weren't very good offensively.
Okay, was Joe Burrow 100% healthy last year?
Nope.
Okay, did the Browns go through 4 different quarterbacks last year?
Yes, they did.
Okay, so when you got to factor in the whole situation, the whole landscape of the NFL when we're talking about, yes, they made the playoffs.
Right.
Barely made the playoffs, right?
Right.
Okay. So when I think about a healthy Joe Burrow coming back, when I think about Lamar Jackson and the Ravens' improved mm-hmm. offense, when I think about the Bengals, the Browns, like, it's not just about the AFC. We haven't even gotten to Patrick Mahomes or Josh Allen. Understand the Bills are going through something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But we haven't even gotten through the rest of the teams in the AFC.
Well, how about getting through the fact that Mike Tomlin finds a way for this team to be relevant for 17 straight years?
Again, because it's my day. Mm-hmm. It's not just about It's them getting through their own division. So, yes, they will be better. But to say that they're going to be
better, Kmart,
I think that's a bit much. That's all. That's all. The
Kmart,
question is, will they be
They won 10 games.
I'm aware. They won
10 games. They got through. They went to the playoffs with the 28th rank, like one of the offense in the bottom third in the league. They did that. You've heard, like, yeah, I talked about 2013 and 2014, right? Okay, Stephen A. backed it up and talked about the last 2 years, the years that we said Russell Wilson has been so horrible, so putrid offensively. Man, the worst we've ever seen. And you still hear 42 touchdowns. You still hear offensive production, at least an output from the quarterback position that is better than what Pittsburgh has had. And so if you are saying that, okay, their offense will be better, which is what you said, imagine a 10-7 team with an offense that maybe it's not the number one, maybe it's not number two, maybe it's not even top five, top eight, but significantly better with T.J. Watt, Defensive Player of the Year, 19 sacks last year, with a healthy Cam Hayward, because to your point, yeah, Joe Burrow was injured and all these guys were injured, Deshaun Watson. Well, so was Cam Hayward, only played 11 games. A healthy Cam Hayward, a Minka Fitzpatrick
who's
healthy
as well,
he went through injuries. So, yes, sure, you conceded the piece about the other guys being injured. You conceded the piece about, okay, their offense is going to be better. But now you have to factor in the fact that, okay, Russell Wilson, even the last 2 years, is significantly better than what Pittsburgh has had the last 2 years. And Pittsburgh has had winning season, playoffs, 10 wins without a quarterback.
Okay, that's very good. Next time, don't take so long. I told you your time is going to be limited today. It's International Women's Day, and you are not going to take up all that time. So the next time you come on, condense your comments, okay? Kimberly, you could be nicer. You really, really could this morning instead of delivering the bad news. Other than that, let me be very clear. Russell Wilson would be an absolute fool to think about going to the Giants ahead of the Steelers. Let me throw that out there. And outside of that, Kimberly, back to you. I'm so disappointed in what you had to say about my Steelers. I'm going to go back to basketball and Shanae rather than talk to you right now. We got to take a break right now.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture X Card. Earn unlimited 2X miles in everything you buy and turn everyday purchases into extraordinary trips. Plus, receive premium travel benefits like access to over 1,300 airport lounges and a $300 annual credit for bookings through Capital One Travel. Unlock a whole new world of travel with a Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. When you're on a business trip, you know what goes completely off the rails? Your workout routine. Especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups, sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or you just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up, power your buys or tries the right way, or de-stress with a little cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Time for a quick take. Steph Curry left last night's loss to the Bulls with an ankle injury, Wendy. What's the latest on Steph?
Yeah, they're going to give him some testing today to see the severity. They didn't have a good feel last night for what he's looking at. The mood on the team after the game, they were worried that he might miss a little bit of time. Now, their next two games are against the Spurs. Wembanyama is questionable for those games at best. So he may not play at all. So he may miss a little bit of time, but they do have a little friendly portion of the schedule playing one of the worst teams, likely missing their likely rookie of the year.
Speaking of injuries, the Lakers injury report for Friday's game against the Milwaukee Bucks has LeBron James listed as questionable with a left ankle injury. He left the Lakers' previous game against the Kings and went straight to the locker room with 3:56 left in the fourth quarter after aggravating it. Meanwhile, Luka Doncic posted an NBA record fourth straight 35-point triple-double in the Mavs 114-108 win over the Heat last night. Earlier this week, the one and only J.J. Redick with high expectations on the Miami Heat moving forward.
The Heat had a 7-game losing streak at the end of January. Since then, they are 11-3, number two defense in the league over the last 14 games. They've got balance, they've got depth, and most importantly, playoff Jimmy is coming.
You heard him, Shanae, so let's get right to it. Which team is more likely to make a return to the conference finals, the Lakers or the Miami Heat?
I'm very curious on your answer, Stephen A., but since it's International Women's Day, I know I'm going to go first because I know you like to manifest Miami in the finals so you can hear Esteban and get to go to South Beach when it comes to June. But the answer is truly Miami because JJ is absolutely correct. It feels like ever since that seven-game losing streak, they have turned the corner. But honestly, it's based off of the Western Conference because if you're going to stack them up against the Lakers' path, the Lakers have the path of most resistance. If the playoffs started slash play-in started today, the Lakers would go up against the Golden State Warriors in the play-in. Then they'd have to look up and play either the Dallas Mavericks with Luka Doncic, who is leading the league in scoring and also has so many clutch moments in the postseason, and the Sacramento Kings just to make the playoffs. And by the way, the Nuggets, they're only one game back of the Timberwolves. We could see a situation where coming in at eight, the Nuggets finish number one, and then you've got Jokic, then you've got that squad that we just saw dismantle the Celtics down the stretch. So yeah, as much as the Lakers have been there, the Heat have a better path to make it moving forward.
Go ahead, Wendy.
Yeah, this is a good question with an easy answer. It's unquestionably the Heat. When you look at the Heat, they're in tied for six right now with Philadelphia, and they have missed the most games due to player injuries of any team in the league. They are not a sixth-place team. They are holding a sixth-place record because of injuries. They are not a sixth-place team. They also have the third easiest schedule coming in by opponent winning percentage. They are primed to move up and finish in that top six. They've got two games left against Philadelphia, who they're tied with, where they can do the separation on their own, not even needing any help. Also, the teams in the East that they're going to have to compete with, all of them are really banged up. And, you know, I can't predict injury futures, but Miami is getting healthier. All those teams are getting more injured. And you look at the Lakers, I don't see them getting into the play-in or getting out of the play-in. I don't see them getting into the top six. So the path for the Heat is going to be easier. They're a better team than their record shows. The Lakers are more accurate to the record that they've had because they've generally been healthy with their star players. I think it's a no-brainer that the Heat, I think it would be hard. They'd have to pull some upsets, but I think the Heat have the better shot.
Well, far be it for me to be the contrarian amongst you both, but I'm going to say, although I sincerely wish that you are right, because you are absolutely telling the truth when everybody and their mama knows where I want to be come June, May, and June, it's Miami. Ain't no doubt about it. However, I would say to y'all that even though the path is easier, it still doesn't mean that I'm going to say that it's more likely for the Heat to get to the conference finals than the Los Angeles Lakers, because let's engage in a hypothetical here because we're allowed to, because the standings are not finite. It's a situation right now where if you're the Los Angeles Lakers and you get to avoid playing Denver until the conference finals per se, who in the West can't be had? Who else has stood out? When the Lakers have gone against OKC, we've seen what they've been able to do with them. They've got the size to some degree to match up with Minnesota, and now Carl Anthony Towns is out. Sacramento can score in bunches on anybody, as they show us time and time again, but they can't defend the way that we would like them to. Oh, Golden State keeps going through one thing after another. Every time we believe in Dallas, something happens. Even when Luka Doncic is dropping triple-doubles, they can still manage to lose to a Philadelphia 76ers team without Joel Embiid on a Sunday afternoon. So we got to take those things into consideration as well. I would tell you, we don't mention New Orleans enough. I will, because they've got size, they've got depth, they've got athleticism, and they've been playing well. They're coming. I'm not going to ignore them. But when I look at the Los Angeles Lakers, since February 1st, 10-5, offensive rating, third best in the NBA behind the Celtics and the Thunder, field goal percentage, 51.4%, tied for the best in the NBA, three-point shooting, 40.1%, third best in the NBA, assists per game, fifth best in the NBA, and turnovers per game, 10.4, second fewest. Now, they can't stop a cold in terms of their backcourt defensively with D'Angelo Russell and Austin Reeves. That's problematic, and I get that. And Anthony Davis has to step up because LeBron James has been doing everything but gift-wrapped in him being the damn number one option and the face of the franchise and the best guy on the team. And he doesn't seem to want to take it in big games the way we would like him to. But in the end, when you look at the Western Conference, I just say to myself, other than Denver, who could you look at the Lakers and say the Lakers can't take? When I look at Miami and I look at Jimmy Butler, Bam Adebayo, Tyler Hero, they've only been on the court with one another 21 of 62 games this year. There's some cohesiveness they would have to work out. They ranked 22nd in the league in offensive efficiency and 25th in rebounds per game. Looking at all of those things for Miami, could they make a run? Sure. But they did it last year. You willing to bet on that this year? I don't know about that, y'all. Go ahead, Janae.
Well, I think you can make that exact argument that you made, like, hey, the matchups, the favorability, you can make that exact argument for the Miami Heat, because in one postseason we saw last year, they took down the Bucks. Now, mind you, I know Giannis was coming off of an injury situation, and if there's one person that I think the Celtics lose sleep over, it is absolutely playoff Jimmy. It is this Miami Heat squad, and they seem like a team similar, I'm not saying in talents or like best team, right, but similar to the Nuggets. Early when the season started, the Denver Nuggets, they lost a couple of early road games. It just seemed like their complete focus wasn't there. And I think that's because they made it to the pinnacle. They made it to the NBA Finals. They won. They won a championship. And now they're like, okay, our focus is showing up in the big games and also having our legs and be ready for those big moments. I think the Miami Heat have paced themselves, and now they're built to surge, especially come the second half of the season.
I would say this, one of the worst-kept secrets in America, if not the basketball universe, I never, ever root against Miami. I don't do that. I don't do that at all.
And by or the way,
the Jaime Jaquez and his mama, I met her once, nice, lovely lady. Happy International Women's Day.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Electric E-Bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Electric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Electric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus! Electric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.